The president wants to spy on 200 million Americans without a warrant. Has he read this document, which he was sworn to uphold?
Now, I will not have you libel Abraham Lincoln.
I don't understand the problem with registering guns. We register cars.
Mark Levine brings you the news the government doesn't want you to know.
Today, an explosive story about connections between white supremacists and Islamic terrorists.
When there's a conflict between Scalia's conservative values and the Constitution of the United States, he throws away the Constitution.
When we do have secret prisons, that is not what America's all about.
Let's go to Mark in 5, 4, 3, 2.
The president wants to spy on 200 million Good evening, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. The Republicans and Democrats are at an impasse. Tell me something new in Washington, D.C. There was one editorial cartoon I saw recently that showed Washington deep in the snow, and someone said, Washington is at an impasse. And the other person said, yes, and then it started to snow. Clearly, the impasse is not caused by the snow. The impasse is caused by a very clear idea on behalf of the Republican Party to demand a supermajority of the Democrats to rule. I'm your host, I should say, Mark Levine, a former congressional attorney. I used to work for the Democrats on the Hill. And I've invited as my guest Republican strategist Mike Lane. We're going to talk today about the perils of bipartisanship. And to show those perils, there's a wonderful cartoon that I saw just this morning, today, in the Washington Post. Can we put that up there, please? Here it says, we Americans are fed up with the government. They can't get anything done. Apparently it takes a supermajority to pass anything. We'll make darn sure nobody has that. And then the little fine print at the bottom, rotate the bums in and out. I think Tom Tolles was dead on in this political cartoon. I think he's exactly right. The American people are just starting to realize the new Republican strategy, the one requiring 60 votes to do anything, and they're getting so angry about it that they'll never allow any party to have 60 votes. The last time the Democrats had, of course, they don't have 60 now. The Democrats have only 59 because of Scott Brown's election in Massachusetts. They had 60 for a few months in last year, 2009. Actually, very few months, because you may recall that the Republicans didn't seat Senator Al Franken until it was, I think it was May, and then Scott Brown was elected, I guess it was, he was just seated February.
January.
Okay, so February. 7 or 8 months. Prior to that time, the last time we see a 60-vote majority is in the 1970s, in the 1960s, in the 1930s with the Democrats. The last time the Republicans had 60 votes, I looked it up, 1908, when Teddy Roosevelt was president. Mike, given the fact that 60-vote majorities are extremely rare, don't you think this Republican requirement that all votes should have 60 from here forth forevermore in American history means, in effect, nothing can ever get passed?
Well, first of all, Mark, I disagree that this is a standing rule now that you're going to need 60 votes on anything. But let's talk about the reason for the filibuster. The rules of the Senate were written that way to protect the rights of the minority and also to ensure a moderation of things that came out of the Congress. The House was envisioned as the hothead branch of government, the hothead chamber of the legislature, where anything could go through immediately. And the Senate was the thoughtful, deliberative part of the legislature, where things were thought out, where things were discussed, where moderation was applied to things in order to get a consensus and a majority of the Senate to pass anything. So I think the filibuster rule is essentially good. I think the reason that you see Republicans wanting to use it, although they haven't used it yet because they only have 40 votes, they can't sustain a filibuster.
41.
Well, they have 41 for the last week, but up until this point, they've only had 40. They can't sustain a filibuster, and they haven't been able to sustain a filibuster for the past 13 months. I think the reason is twofold. Number one, they feel like their rights as the minority have been trampled, and that's what happens when you are such a minority that you've got only 40% of the chamber. And the second thing is there has been no effort on the part of the Democrats to compromise or work with Republicans. If they did that, if you had truly bipartisan ideas coming forth, then you would see enough Republicans and Democrats cooperating with each other that you would have the 60 votes necessary on almost every piece of legislation to overcome the filibuster. It hasn't happened because the Democrats have been so partisan.
Mike, I think you've said enough in the last 2 minutes to give me an hour worth of work
to
respond.
Let's go to it.
Let's start, first of all, with the history of the filibuster. It's very interesting. I don't know if you've studied it, but it came up, actually, it's sort of an accident. In fact, the very first Senate, 1789, a lot of people don't know this, did have a rule that lets you cut off time, just like the House did. Aaron Burr, that wonderful vice president who was later convicted of treason, suggested that this rule was unnecessary because when there would be two votes, one vote to bring the matter to a vote and another vote on the issue, and he thought that was redundant, and he took it out in the early 1800s, about a decade after it had been used just fine. From that time until about 50 years later, the filibuster was never used. All the battles over slavery, the vicious difficulties that this country suffered between North and South over slavery and states' rights, not used once. Wasn't even tried. They didn't even really discover this anomaly in the rules until the latter part of the 19th century. The other thing is that it has been used very rarely. If you look all through American history, up until really the 50s and 60s, you find that it was a rare Congress that used it four or five times. It was extremely rare. During the Civil Rights battles, it was used. Strom Thurmond, in fact, was probably the most famous person to use the filibuster.
I actually think it was Al Gore's father who was the most famous one, but that's okay.
Strom Thurmond gave the longest filibuster.
He held the floor for 24 hours.
Yes, until he had to go to the bathroom, and finally, thus we got the 1957 Civil Rights Bill. Of course, in those days, you had to actually speak on and on and on and on. You mm-hmm. didn't have this idea of, well, if you need the number of votes and you don't have it, you just get to move on with your other business. As you know, it was diminished from 67 votes to 60 votes in the mid-70s. And even since that time, you can go up to the 70s and 80s, and you'll see it's rare to have a filibuster more than 20 times in a Congress. In the Congress preceding this one, the 07-08 Congress, the first time the Democrats held both houses of Congress since 1993, you find the filibuster used more in that year than any preceding year in history, by far, double any other preceding year in history. And in calendar year 2009, the filibuster was used more times than in 07 and 08 put together. The Republicans have filibustered so much. Let me give you some examples of their filibusters. They filibustered the troops, giving aid and arms to the troops, something that Republicans have always supported. I don't think they're against body armor. They filibustered an extension of unemployment insurance. And then when it came to the floor, they voted for it, 98-0. They've been filibustering President Obama's nominees, and many of them, when they get to the floor, are unanimous, such as Judge Greenaway, who was just approved recently. So it's not that they're against Obama's policies. They're simply just trying to gum up the works. Does that have a place in our democracy?
Well, I would disagree with your interpretation, and no, that kind of stuff doesn't have a place in our democracy. You might note that just a short time ago, senators view themselves as fairly important players on the landscape, both Republicans
and
Democrats.
Who can?
If they're in office too long, they start believing their own press releases, and they start getting an inflated idea of their own importance. And there was an issue just last week where a Republican senator, I actually forget which one it was,
Richard Shelby of Alabama,
wanted wanted the attention of the administration on something that was important to his home state.
He wanted pork.
He wanted
Northrop Grumman in Alabama
He wanted something that was important to his state. So he put a blanket hold. This wasn't even a filibuster. He put a blanket hold
on
all nominees. But you know what? It lasted 2 days, Mark, and then it went away.
But you know why it went away?
Because you brought the public pressure
It went away because President Obama said he was going to do them all recess appointments. He used the Constitution. He knows it.
Right.
And he pulled out his Constitution and said, oh, well, if you're going to go around, then I'm just going to do recess appointments.
I think it went away because Senator Shelby's interest in discussing the issues that he wanted discussed was met. No promises in terms of what was going to happen.
He was promised nothing. Northrop Grumman got nothing.
I think you'll find that Senator Reid promised Mr. Shelby that the issues that he wanted to discuss, there will be a time for them to be discussed on the floor of the Senate. I think you'll find that's actually
the
case.
I have no problem discussing people's issues. But clearly, this use of procedure is out of bounds.
But the Democrats do have a problem with letting Republicans talk these days. And that is one of the reasons that things appear to be so partisan at this time. Now, I'm ultimately with you. I don't think this partisanship serves the people well. I don't think it serves the Republic well. I think that there is a better way to do it. But you and I would disagree as to the genesis of this.
Well, let's talk about
it. And it's the hyper-partisanship of Harry Reid and Barack Obama that have created this environment.
Well, let's talk about the genesis of this, because when I think of hyper-partisanship, I think back to the time that I served in Congress, not as a representative, but as a congressional attorney. Maybe that'll come in the future, but I certainly haven't done that. What I remember is one of the first big votes when I came to Washington was a vote on the Bush tax cuts. And they decided to use this thing called budget reconciliation, which allows 50 votes rather than a filibuster of 60. Now, this had never been done before. The whole purpose of budget reconciliation, as Senator Byrd, the constitutionalist in the Senate, was demanding, is to cut the budget deficit, not to increase the budget deficit, which the tax cuts did by a massive amount. Bush said, I don't care. I'm going to ram it through. I don't care what the Democrats do. He said, we're going to need only 50 votes, and he did it, and he set a precedent.
Well, actually, he didn't do it. The Senate did it.
Well, okay, you were blaming Obama and Reid. We can then blame, I don't know, it was Trent Lott that was there at the time.
Perhaps.
I think he was. Trent Lott and George Bush. In any case, Bush and Lott agreed together that that's what they were going to do. Now, when the Democrats suggest doing the exact same maneuver on health care, the Republicans scream, oh, no, no, you can't do this. And I got to say, I see a lot of hypocrisy on both sides, but more, I guess, from the Republicans now, because I remember, and you were part of it, arguing for what they call the nuclear option, getting rid of the filibuster by fiat. I remember arguing about, at least with regard to judges, that filibusters were improper. I remember the Republican, you know, using budget reconciliation. And now the Democrats want majority rule, just like the Republicans had. The Republicans scream, no, 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 you can't do this. We need minority rule.
You know, it's not minority rule. It's protection of the rights and interests of the minority, Mark. Here's the thing. I think the filibuster is essentially a good tool. Anytime you can get 40% of the legislative body to look at a particular issue and say, this issue is so extreme and so egregious that we are willing to mount a filibuster of extended debate to keep it from coming to a final vote, then you likely have an issue or a piece of legislation that is so extreme. Something that is a little bit more moderate, a little bit more middle of the road, will allow the majority to pick off individual members of the minority to bring them on board, and then the filibuster collapses because you've no longer got 40 members of the minority that view this as being extreme.
Mike,
so if the Democrats would tone down the extremeness of their agenda, we wouldn't have this.
We have to take a break. When we come back, I want to address that very point, because I disagree. I think this president has worked very hard to reach out to Republicans. I think Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid has too. And these aren't extreme proposals. Republicans are demanding all or nothing. But we'll debate that. We'll also get your calls. 888-488-MARK. 888-488-6275. Back after this.
This is FirstGov.com.
Here again, the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Applications on the site, baby. This calls for a celebration.
Here's your uncle.
So in the end, it was either take the astronaut gig or come work here. What can I say? Duty called.
Dude, that's my cop.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah. No, I'm pretty sure that's Sam's cop.
Oh, sorry?
Yeah. No. Sam's. No.
Just log on or email us and get what you need.
C, change of address form. That's how it's done.
D, driver's license renewal. Mm-hmm.
E, emailing social security information.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Nice, we'll allow it. All right, Ed.
What are those?
Government surplus cars for auction.
You posted those online last time.
No, you did.
I'm posting them online this time!
For all your government information, firstgov.gov.
Stop! Oh, what have we got here? Sometimes you feel tired. You can't seem to lose those extra pounds off your midsection. And your joints hurt when you take the stairs. Well, you're getting older. But I'm happy to say that there's some simple things we can do to keep you happy and healthy for years to come. We can also lower your risk for some serious diseases the older population is often subject to. Proper nutrition is more important than ever. Your body has changed, you know. Not as many treats. A basic exercise plan, lots of walks and fresh air, and most importantly, come and see me for twice yearly checkups. to help ensure the best possible quality of life. Now, how does that sound? Good boy.
Improve the quality of life for your elderly pet. Schedule twice yearly checkups that include preventive care and regular lab work. A message from the veterinary members of the American Animal Hospital Association.
Here again, The Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to The Inside Scoop. Is there too much partisanship in America? And if so, what can we do about it? The Democrats have the largest majority outside of 8 months ago that they've seen in 30 years, 59 senators. And yet, even that's not enough. Even Barack Obama's election by the largest majority a Democratic candidate has gotten since Lyndon Johnson that's 40 some odd years, is not enough. The Republicans are insisting on doing something that has never been done in the history of the Republic, filibustering virtually every, if not every single bill that comes to the floor. Does that mean that the filibuster itself needs to go away? Or does that mean that if the Republicans insist that that they have to approve every single thing that goes through the legislature? Mike Lane, Republican strategist, here's the thing. The Republicans haven't said, we'll compromise on this point and agree to the larger point. I want to know if you agree with me that in general, the rule should be that the majority should largely get its way with a bend to the minority. I mean, to me, that's how the system's supposed to work. Most of what the majority wants should happen. If the minority, those that lost the election, want to tinker around the edges, then they should have that right to tinker around the edges. But they shouldn't be dictating what happens. I mean, I think you can agree that's largely the way it should work.
No, I don't. I think the way it should work is the proponents of the legislation, be they minority or majority. There's no reason why a minority senator can't propose something and get it through. They need to craft that legislation such that it does not inspire 41 members of the Senate to mount a filibuster against it, which means it can't be radical, it can't be overwhelming, it needs to be more middle of the road, more moderate, and when you can get in excess of 60 people to support bringing something to the floor, you probably have something that is a more moderate, more acceptable piece of legislation.
Well, let's talk about moderate legislation and the two that I mentioned. One was extending unemployment insurance. Now, the final vote was 98-0. In other words, 98 senators supported the extension of unemployment insurance, two didn't vote or abstained, and no one opposed it. That particular proposal was filibustered by the Republicans and thus took up at least a week or two of Senate time. Was that appropriate?
Mark, again, the Republicans only had 40 votes. They couldn't filibuster anything without Democratic support.
But what it meant is that it delayed Senate process. I mean, the American people, I think Tom Tolles, his cartoon has it right. They're upset. They're upset that nothing's getting done in Washington. The Republicans purposely prevented Washington from acting for 2 weeks on something they themselves supported. The unemployment insurance, the other example I would give you, was arming the troops in Iraq and Afghanistan. So the Republicans very much support as a whole, but no, right. They filibustered that one too.
As you know, Mark, there was ancillary material in that bill that Republicans
They voted
supposed.
For it overwhelmingly.
Well, ultimately, yes. When you are faced with a choice of 35 different non-related issues being packed into a defense bill, are you going to kill the defense bill on the spot and leave the troops bare? No, you're not going to do that. But you're going to do whatever you can to draw attention to the fact that there are non-germane, non-related things in that bill that the Republicans were totally opposed to. Now, we both know, and our viewers probably know, you can't do that in the House. Things have to be germane. But in the Senate, the rules are nothing has to be germane to anything. You can offer things. So this was the Republican tool to bring the American people's attention to the fact that this was a lot more than just keeping the troops in bullets and beans and Band-Aids.
Actually, I mean, there wasn't much in that other than that. But the main thing is that the Republicans are constantly on the nominations, on unemployment insurance. Their goal, let's face it, is to shut the government down. They want to make sure nothing good or bad comes out of this Congress, and I think the reason is clear. I think it's because your leader, Rush Limbaugh, has said that he wants Obama to fail, and if America has to fail in order for the president to fail, he's okay with it. The American people are upset, and they're upset that nothing's being done in Washington. And Republicans say, aha, if nothing gets done, we can take power.
I think actually the American people are very happy that most of what's being discussed the last year has not been done. And I will concede to you that, in my opinion, appointments ought to be voted on up and down, and they should not be a filibusterable kind of thing. It might take a reinterpretation or a change in the Senate rules to do that. But I personally don't think that nominations should be filibustered. Interestingly enough, Mark, you know, last week the president's nominee to the National Labor Relations Board, it was a filibuster. Harry Reid put it to a cloture vote, and guess what? 52 votes in favor of continuing debate and 33 in favor of shutting things down.
It's the opposite, Mike.
No.
It's the opposite. 52 voted for cloture, 33 voted against him. No, 52, a majority of the Senate wanted the National Labor Relations Board in.
But you gotta
didn't get 60.
All right, you got to get there, though.
Let me make a distinction, because this actually relates to something we argued about when
that guy is way extreme. I don't believe in...
He's not extreme at all.
Oh, he's totally extreme. But we'll save that for another night.
look. Let me make a suggestion to you on filibusters, because it seems to me that you've got it backwards. Maybe even try to convince you right here on this program.
Go ahead.
There are two types of people that the president nominates. One is members of his staff, members of his cabinet heads, departments, district attorneys, attorney generals across...
United States attorneys.
That's the word I was looking for. Those are people that serve at the pleasure of the president. The president can dismiss as he wishes. And generally, they change from administration to administration unless they're very good, and then they stay on. Those, I suggest to you, should not be filibusterable. It's the president, it's his team or her team. If we ever get a female president, you know, if you disagree on the nominee, okay, fine. The Senate has a right to advise and consent, but nowhere in the Constitution does it require 60 votes. When it comes to a judge, an Article III judge, a judge who cannot be fired, he can only be impeached, someone who rules for the rest of his or her life. On that instance, I actually think it should be 60 votes, whether it's Supreme Court or anyone down, because that's someone who cannot be fired by the president, doesn't serve at the president's pleasure, and represents not the president the way a cabinet official might, but represents the American people and the Constitution and the law. Doesn't it make sense to filibuster judicial nominees, but not regular nominees, cabinet nominees, and so forth?
You know, you haven't convinced me. I mean, it's a legitimate argument. I won't take away that you've got some good arguments.
There's a big difference between the two.
But I won't do it. You're right in pointing out that a judge is a lifetime appointment and cannot be fired by the president. But you know what? They can be fired by the Congress. And if they turn
impeach for high crimes and misdemeanors.
Right,
and
exactly. They can be fired by the Congress.
No, but the difference is if you have a cabinet official that's not doing the president's agenda, the president gets rid of that cabinet official. That's fine. That doesn't mean that they've committed fraud or some kind of impropriety. They simply aren't following the president's will. The cabinet is supposed to be the president's guys and girls, people, the president's men and women. Judges are not supposed to be the president's men and women. The judges are supposed to be true to their oath to follow the Constitution. It seems to me that if there's anyone a supermajority is required for, it should be a judge rather than someone who works for the president.
You know, if you've got someone who's nominated for judgeship who is so extreme that they can't even get 50 votes, they won't get in there. I think presidential nominees, be they judicial or executive, ought to have the opportunity for a fair up and down vote.
Well, I think
you'll find that presidents will improve some of their nomination process selectees if they understand that these nominees are actually going to get a vote and be debated in front of the American people. A lot of these, shall we say, lightweights may not get the nomination in the first place.
In any case, your view, which has been consistent, at least on this point, has completely changed in your party. Your party, which was railing against the Democrats for filibustering judicial nominees, has now turned around on its head. And the majority of the Republicans in the Senate have said, oh, it's just fine to filibuster judicial nominees. And not only that, but cabinet nominees. In fact, President Obama had, until just a week ago, had some 86 nominees out. Now it's down to only 60-something. At a time when 1 year into his presidency, Bush had six. And need I remind you, Obama was elected by the American people in the Electoral College. Bush was elected by the Supreme Court. So here you have a legitimate election, and the Republicans... I'd be hard-pressed, I think, for you to deny they're trying to stop everything from going forward.
Mark, you know, both sides are guilty of great or gross hypocrisy at this point. Yes, The Republicans, who never met a filibuster they liked when they were in the majority, now are very warm to the concept.
Yes.
Democrats, who filibustered the heck out of everything, now haven't seen a filibuster they like at all. In fact, if you go to YouTube, I'm sorry I didn't bring my computer, you can find a picture, you know, when you just mentioned a few minutes ago that Obama has threatened to make recess appointments if he can't get his nominees through.
Sure.
You can go to YouTube and you can find Senator Obama on the floor of the Senate railing against the entire process of recess appointments,
oh, sure.
How it's contrary to the whole thing, how
oh,
it's,
sure.
you know, blah, 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 blah.
Hey, listen, that at least is part of the Constitution.
So President Obama is a total hypocrite.
No.
The Senate Democrats are total hypocrites and the Senate Republicans are hypocrites. What else is new? They're politicians.
Okay, so here's the thing. If both parties are incorrigible, if both parties are complete hypocrites, if both parties are going to play every single tool in the book, even on things they like, even when they're going to vote 98-0, they're still, just to make the Democrats upset, just to gum up the process, the Republicans, just to destroy democracy and make the Senate wait 2-3 weeks, they're going to filibuster even things they agree with. If the rule is full steam ahead, destroy the other party, even at the expense of the American people, let me suggest to you, that rule, if the Republicans play this game and continue to play this game, will now exist from now until eternity. The Republicans are setting a standard. They're mm-hmm. saying, you must have 60 votes in order for the government to function, otherwise we're shutting the government down. By setting that standard, if the Democrats follow suit, and it would be fair for them to do so, what you're saying, in effect, is that the American people can never, this Tom Dole's cartoon is right, they can never rule. In fact, the last time the Republicans had 60 votes, again, I tell you, was 1908. Are the Republicans saying there'll be no government unless we ever have a supermajority?
Okay, first of all, they're not shutting the government down. What they're doing is they're forcing the process of the Senate to work through things and come up with reasonable, moderate legislation that the Senate has not considered. Now, I will grant you that what goes around comes around. And we all know that after the next election cycle, it's going to be very close as to who controls the Senate. The Democrats may hang on to a very thin majority. The Republicans may take the Senate by one vote or something like that. It's going to be very, very close after the next election. If the Republicans are successful and take control of the Senate, I fully expect that the then Democrat minority caucus will employ the same legislative tactics that the Republicans
this
used.
This is a recipe for gridlock. Gridlock for decades to come.
What the Republicans need to do then is, unlike what the Democrats have done, the Republicans need to include the Democrats in the process of crafting legislation from the beginning so that the Democrats are invested in a mutually agreeable agenda. And anything that Democrats think Republicans are pushing that might be a little bit too extreme, a little bit too far, if they want to filibuster it, it's not going to go through. And that's just the way it goes.
How about budget reconciliation? That's what Bush did.
You know, I would not have used budget reconciliation for those tax cuts.
But what goes around comes around, right? So it's only fair the Democrats do the same thing this time.
You know, there's a difference between tax cuts and social policy. If you want to keep it to the numbers in reconciliation, you've got the precedent. If you try and put social policy in there, I think you're going to see a nuclear bomb on the floor of the Senate.
If you want to, well, I know he doesn't mean that literally. We're going to talk about that because I think the Democrats have included Republicans from the very beginning. What do you think? 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. Back after this.
Around the world, one out of every three women will be beaten or otherwise abused in their lifetime, often by a family member or loved one. A future free from violence. It's all she's ever wished for.
Did you know you have the power to stop children from joining gangs? You can help a father find a job and home for his family. You can assist a woman who can't afford the medicine she needs to live and the home she can't live without. You can choose to make a difference in our community. Support Volunteers of America, and you can help improve the lives of nearly 2 million Americans each year with programs and services that help individuals and families overcome their challenges to become as independent as possible. Support the programs that are working in our community. Contact Volunteers of America today. Call 1-800-VOLUNTEERS. 877-899-0089.
For some folks, saving for the future is easy. But for you, it might take a little more effort. Saving for your future is your responsibility. And there's a lot to save for.
I never thought of that.
Like your child's education, perhaps uncovered medical expenses, or just to be sure you can live the way you want when you retire. The time is now to save for tomorrow. Save now or work forever. The choice is yours. Choose to save.
Here again, The Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to The Inside Scoop. We are talking about gridlock. We're talking about partisanship. We're talking about the tactics of the current Republican minority in the Senate to basically shut the government down, not to let anything pass. Now, my guest, Republican strategist Mike Lane, argues this is because the Democrats didn't include the Republicans enough. Well, let's talk about that. President Obama, three times right after he was elected president, did something that George Bush didn't do in 8 years as president. He went to the Republican caucus, and he sat down with Republican senators, Republican members of the House, and said, what do you need? Let's talk. Needless to say, that gesture was not returned. On the health care debate, which is the biggest thing that was basically argued over last year, Obama time and time again said, what do you need from me? What do you need from me to support this bill? I'm willing to work with you, Olympia Snow. I'm willing to work with you, Susan Collins. I'm willing to work with you, Republicans. For example, tort reform. Tort reform, maybe 1% or 2% of health care costs. It's a tiny percentage of health care costs. I happen to think a woman who's got a scalpel left in her should be able to get that scalpel out. You may disagree.
No, I think she should, Mark.
I'm glad to hear you get
it. That's not what tort reform is all about.
So you don't agree with completely knocking out victims' rights. I'm glad to hear that. At the end of the day, though, tort reform is 1% or 2% of health care. And Obama said, I'm willing to work with you if you're willing to support the things I support. For example, covering every American, making sure that if you have a pre-existing condition, you will not be cut off. These are things that 70 and 80% of the American people, depending on which poll you look at, support. The public option always has had a majority of American people. So these are the essence of his bill. Now, there are some things in the bill that I don't like. I'm sure you don't like, you know, the Nebraska stuff that was used to get Ben Nelson on board. The Democrats have been more than willing to get rid of that, but they said, work with us. What do you need, Olympia Snow? What do you need, Susan Collins? What do you need, Republicans? We'll give you the tort reform you want. What do you need to pass the bill? And Republicans said, no dice. We're not negotiating at all. We're not going to, even though some, 200 Republican amendments are currently in the current health care bill? I think it's
as
200
you
in the
out,
House
Mark,
and the Senate.
Nibbling around the edges. Not substantive, not big. You know, a lot of them even perfecting amendments, but... nonetheless,
well, John McCain's proposal is there. The idea, he got rid of the public option, and we have this idea of this separate where the American people can combine together to negotiate with insurance companies. That's in there. That was John McCain's proposal.
Right. Let me ask you this. If we had a separate bill just on its own to do something about the difficulties with pre-existing conditions, what kind of vote do you think that would get in the Senate?
How would you pay for it?
The government's not going to pay for it.
Under Obama's bill, it's paid for, and we save money.
No. If you just had something that said, if you are an insurance company, you know, selling health insurance policies, you may not have a pre-existing condition exclusion. How many votes do you think that would get?
Well,
we'd get 100.
It's not possible.
I think we'd get 100. I think we'd get 100
you mean,
votes.
Oh, so you mean increase, because the CBO would say that increased the deficit many trillions
Why dollars. Would the deficit, I mean, this is just between me wanting to buy a policy and not being turned down because I have a,
okay. You're saying with no government aid to anyone who can't afford it.
No government aid to anybody. If we just got rid of the pre-existing condition
exclusion.
Well,
let's talk about that. So I'm an insurance company, and you have a pre-existing condition. I say, I'll fund your cancer. It will cost you $10 million, Mike. Oh, you don't have $10 million?
Right.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Right.
I won't be able to fund your cancer.
Let's create a band. You know, in the Senate bill, a band of, you know, how high above a standard policy it can go. I think in the Senate bill it was 180% or something like that. Let's impose that limit right now and say, okay, no exclusion for pre-existing conditions, and that's the cap.
Okay,
You think that would get 100 votes
in
the Senate?
Let's take that. Now, if you do that, you know that the insurance companies are going to impose those costs on everybody, and they're going to do so in a way that the uninsured still won't be covered. I mean, Obama has.
I don't want to talk about the uninsured yet. We'll get to that. I want to talk about just getting rid of the pre-existing condition exclusion that is, you know, such a boogeyman.
I think that would be great, but the problem is that they would do nothing about skyrocketing insurance costs.
Would we get 100 votes on it? Would we get 100 votes on it?
We might.
Okay.
Well, not 100 votes. No, because I think many Republicans are in the pocket of insurance companies. All right, so we get that done. Now, what do we do about skyrocketing insurance costs that have doubled every 10 years?
Okay, Republicans want to let insurance companies market across state lines.
Right.
Democrats, for some reason, don't want insurance companies to market across state lines, and I don't understand why that is.
I'll be happy to explain the reason.
Please do.
It's really very simple. It's called a race to the bottom. You see, currently, we have all manner of state laws. And, for example, if you get a credit card, most states require that they can't charge you more than 10 or 12% interest. Ah, but all the credit card companies go to South Dakota. Because South Dakota lets you charge 25, 30, 35, and 40%. Mm-hmm. So Citibank, which you would think is out of New York, actually is headquartered in South Dakota. Race to the bottom. The same is true with Delaware and corporations. The race to the bottom in healthcare works something like this. Let's say Mississippi, and I don't mean to pick on Mississippi, it might be Wyoming, it might be New Jersey, but one state, let's say Mississippi, says you don't need to cover cancer, you don't have to cover heart attacks, you don't have to cover anything, a cough and a sneeze, that's it.
But
therefore employers, we're only going to charge you $100 for health care. It won't be real health care, it'll be $100. Then employers all across the nation can then go to Mississippi and make sure that they can get rid of paying health care for hundreds of millions of Americans will lose health care. All you have to do is cross state lines, and you can be sure, because Americans, about 80%, get their health care from their employer. Some statistics say higher. Now suddenly hundreds of millions of Americans will be denied health care entirely. Great idea, Mike. Let them cross those state lines.
You're talking about a problem that doesn't exist.
If you allow...
Tell me right now one state that says you can write a policy that will not cover cancer.
Every state.
50 states in the District of Columbia say, nope, that's not going to happen.
It depends which cancer. It depends what level. Every state has different regulations. Here's the answer. It's something that President Obama has said he would support. He said, I have no problem allowing insurance companies to cross state lines as long as they have to continue to follow state laws.
It's not the same policy, Mark.
Mike, you are someone, and I've debated you many, many times.
I know, but that's
you
that's
love the 10th Amendment to the Constitution,
yes,
the one
I do.
That says the powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution are reserved to the states, respectively. You talk about states' rights all the time. Shouldn't states have the right to say, in our state, if you want to do an insurance policy in our state, there's certain basic minimums you have to cover, and you have to cover these minimums. President Obama has already said he is fine with letting insurance companies cross state lines as long as they obey the minimum that the elected representatives of those states have required from themselves.
Okay, Mark,
what's wrong with that?
There's also an interstate commerce clause, which is the most over-abused clause by Democrats, but one that relates here. You cannot have a patchwork of 50 different state regulations.
Why not?
Because then you're going to have the Cadillac of all plans, and instead of lowering costs, you're going to increase costs for everybody.
I'm not saying,
you're going to drive insurance
I'm not saying
so
race
expensive.
To the top. And I'm not saying race to the bottom. I'm saying let the people of the individual 50 states decide whatever they want. You know, Hawaii's got a great proposal. They have a public option. The people there are very happy. They have the lowest health care in the nation, and they live the longest. They have the best health care in the nation, and they have the lowest cost because they have, in essence, like a European plan.
I don't know about their health care. I'll stipulate to what you're saying.
Hawaii's doing very well.
That they do well. But I think it has more to do with their diet and their genetics than it does with their health care. I mean, let's face it. You know, this is a separate population.
I'm going to show you an article on that to look at Hawaii at some point.
Let's take a look at the other public option
thing.
You know, cover everybody, Massachusetts. It is a
when
disaster.
When you say crossing state lines, that sounds so good. That's a great soundbite.
It does.
If you're going to use the soundbite, I'm going to use the soundbite. I fully support crossing state lines. Let's talk about where we differ as Democrats and Republicans, because the American people don't know the difference. The difference is you want to cross state lines and you want to ignore all state regulations and protections, allowing companies to race to the bottom and get the weakest, most inexclusive health care. I want to let the people of the several states, through their elected representatives, demand certain minimums in care, and President Obama supports my view.
Look, the Interstate Commerce Clause gives the federal government the right to...
I'm not arguing about the constitutionality. I'm talking about the wisdom of
this. Okay. The wisdom is if you don't have a federal waiver on this, then you're right back to where we are. You're saying you can market across state lines, but it's only the Cadillac plan that's going to survive. The Cadillac plan that, you know, the president wants to tax.
You could be a company.
At 40%.
You could be a company in Mississippi that offers New York residents your policy that follows New York law.
But no, they can do that now. That's not what we're talking about, marketing the same plan across state lines. Like, you can have a group in Mississippi, a group in New York, a group in Idaho, a group in Virginia, and a group in Florida, and a group in California, all as part of the same plan.
See,
now, if you do that,
you oppose federal standards. You clearly oppose federal minimum standards, right, for health care. That would be federalizing and public health care. Republicans
tend to oppose federal standards. I'm willing to go with you on a discussion on that in return for marketing across state lines.
Well, no, wait a minute. Let's just be clear here. If you have federal standards, there are federal standards. And these are, I support federal standards. I support one universal health care for everyone, frankly. I support a public option where you would have one federal standard across state lines. This is your miracle idea. A federal option, a public option across state lines. The problem with the race to the bottom, though, is if you allow all states' regulations to go away so that you have the minimum state, the worst state possible, then what you're telling employers is if you cut people off, they can lose their health care and go to the very bottom.
I disagree. Look, I've been in a situation where I bought group plans for employees, and you know, nobody's sitting there trying to figure out how to screw their employees. In fact,
of course they are.
In fact, health plans.
Have you not seen The Office?
Health plans.
Did you see when Dwight had to choose the health care plan for The Office? It is cheaper.
I didn't see that
episode.
Did
you see that episode?
But I will.
It is cheaper for employers to pay their employees less. I have an idea, one that you should love as a Republican, that would make businesses much, much happier across the country. Let's take health care off their back entirely. Let's say businesses, you pay employees merely based on how good they are, not on how sick they are, and the federal government will take over that.
No, let the private industry take over. I have no problem with individual responsibility for purchasing your own coverage instead of employers. I think it should be an individual responsibility, something that we start off with early in life and carry through us the whole time. But we've already evolved into an employer-based standard. I just don't know how we get rid of that. The government standard isn't going
to
work.
Well, we have a call on the line, but I'm going to hold on. I'm going to tell you to hold, George, if you could, because we only got about a minute or so left, and I want to give George all the time he needs. He's usually quite
entertaining.
He has a lot to say, and I want to make sure that I don't cut him off. So, George, hang on for me. Let me just say this. On health care, on February 25th, the President of the United States has invited the Republicans to sit down with him publicly. The Republicans tell you this shouldn't be done behind closed doors, and frankly, it hasn't been. We've had, I forget how many congressional hearings and committees have been over the past year.
And when the President invited the Democrats to the White House for 5 days to talk about it, how many cameras were in there, Mark?
He said to the Republicans who demanded the cameras, come talk with me February 25th, sit down, tell me your ideas, tell me what you need. He's been saying this for a year, now he's going to say it publicly. Tell me what you need in tort reform, maybe even state lines. Maybe there's something we can agree with. What do you need in order to support health care reform? Should Republicans attend that meeting?
Absolutely, and they will.
Oh, they better. That's good, because Rush Limbaugh is calling it a trap.
Right.
And I even heard John Boehner, the minority leader of the House, calling it a trap. It's not a trap. Bipartisanship is not a trap.
No, it is a trap. The president has no intent of being bipartisan about this. He's trying to trap Republicans, but he's awkward.
Stating their views.
But he's awkward and clumsy about that. The Republicans will get out of the Obama trap, and they will be there, and they will state their views, and the American people will see that the Republicans have a better plan.
It's not a trap to require the opposition party merely to state their views on the record. It's the minimum that every party in the United States should have to do. We're going to get back with George's call and your call, too. 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. Right back. It was 1975.
Okay.
Some dreams are universal. Dreams that inspire us. Multiple sclerosis is a devastating disease that changes lives forever. The National MS Society does more for people with MS than any organization in the world. But we can't do it alone. To get involved, visit us online at nationalmssociety.org. or call 1-800-FIGHT-MS. This is why we're here. Because nobody dreams of having multiple sclerosis.
What's wrong with this picture? half of young Americans can't locate economic powers like Japan and India. 20% can't even find the Pacific Ocean. Without geography, our children aren't ready for the world. Geography is everywhere. It's incredible creatures. Rhythm. Fashion. Flavor. It's economics and politics. It's change. Understanding connections between people and places is critical in the 21st century. That's why we created MyWonderfulWorld.org. Go there now for your free parent and teacher action kits and give our kids the power of global knowledge. Because kids who understand our world today can succeed in it tomorrow.
Here again, The Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to The Inside Scoop. We're talking about the perils of partisanship. Here we now have a Republican Party that can't win enough elections to take over, so they decide to shut down the government the old-fashioned way. They use a filibuster in the Senate. Should the Democrats use budget reconciliation to go around the minority the way the Republicans did back in the early Bush era? I don't know. Let's find out what George from Fairfax has to say. George, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I wanted to follow on from the previous discussion.
Please
about
do.
Healthcare.
Yes.
And it would seem to me that if the Republicans want America to be competitive, and we are on a world stage now, we do like to export compared to our imports. We're not doing so well. So we like to export, try and balance those books. If we're paying over 17% of our GNP on healthcare insurance, a healthcare cost, it seems like the medical industry is taxing us out of competitiveness. Why wouldn't we want to have a national health system like all the other countries that run around anywhere between about 7% and 11% of their GNP?
George, you have a good point. Let me raise it to Mike. George raises the point that President Obama raises all the time, just the spiraling cost of health care. George points out quite accurately that one-sixth of our GDP, one out of every $6 spent anywhere in the American economy is spent on health care, and this is double what it was just 10 years ago. Just 10 years ago, it was about 9%, something like today it's 17%. It's runaway. What is the Republican plan to deal with runaway health care costs?
Competition, Mark. We need to have insurance.
We
companies.
Have competition.
We don't have competition. Let's take Rhode Island, okay? Do you know how many, if you're a resident of Rhode Island, do you know how many plans you have a choice of if you live in the state of Rhode Island? Exactly. Two.
Yeah, Alabama, I think,
that's
is 90%
it.
Blue Cross.
Two.
So why? Now, my view is the best way to have competition is to have a public option. Let the government compete against the private insurers. May the best team win. What's your view? Because what's the government doing to keep out competition?
They
already have an antitrust exemption. Are you willing to get rid of that?
My view is I enjoy living in a country where the government doesn't put private industry out of business.
Why is there no competition right now?
And I don't want to, under any circumstances, I don't care what the problem is, I do not want the government becoming a private competitor, trying to put people out of jobs and put companies out of business, competing with them on an unfair...
It wouldn't be unfair, but tell me this.
What's the cost of capital to the government? The answer is nothing. Congress appropriates it.
How terrible it would be for Americans to have cheaper health care like all the other countries across the globe. But tell me this, what is the Republican plan? You mentioned Rhode Island has no competitiveness.
Right.
Fine, stipulate to that. I think it's probably true. What do we do? What would you do? What's the Republican plan?
I would let insurance companies market across state lines. I would let them have multiple
and
levels
of things.
And that
would lower costs.
If Rhode Islanders had a choice of 200 plans, yes, it would lower the cost.
So basically, Rhode Islanders have a choice. They can go with the plans that their government says is the minimum needed for their and that the people needed, or they can do the Mississippi fly-by-night plan, the one that doesn't cover any sickness that their employer will now cover, and the Rhode Islanders won't have a choice in the matter because the dirty little secret about health care, Mike, is the 200 plans, the person who makes that choice isn't the individual. 80% of the time, it's their employer that makes the choice.
And you know what, Mark? Again, I told you, I've been in that seat. I've bought group health plans for employees. When I'm doing that, I am not looking for how I'm going to screw my employees.
You're looking for the cheapest plan.
No, what I'm looking for is a plan that will be an attractive benefit that will help me recruit and retain the best employees for my staff.
Why should you have to do that at all?
That is the way I'm looking at it.
Why should you have to do that at all? Wouldn't it be best? Let me give an example. You're an employer, all right? You've got two employees. Wouldn't it be best to hire... let's say I've got one employee, and he's really good. I mean, he's the best employee I've ever seen, but he's got a health condition that could be quite expensive for my company. And then I've got another employee. She's good. She's good. She's not near as good as the guy is, but she's in perfect health. Now, she will cost me less than he will. He'll be better. He'll do a better job, better performance, clearly better candidate, but he's got a pre-existing condition that's going to cost a lot of health care. She's cheaper. She's cheaper because, well, she's healthy. Maybe I should hire the less employee because the less qualified employee because she's healthier than he is.
First of all, Mark, you don't know this. I mean, this,
sure
this,
you do.
How would an employer know who's got what health conditions during the interview and
someone's
hiring process?
In a wheelchair, Mike.
Okay, well, if you're in a wheelchair, that doesn't necessarily mean that you've got a, you know, you could, for any number of reasons, you could be paralyzed, you could have been an amputee.
I think
you know,
employers
this is not a
know
situation
about
that,
their employees' health situation, and I think that
you,
a lot
you
of
don't.
Times
you really
employers
don't.
Have to make decisions where they actually hire the less qualified person merely because they're not so expensive for their health care.
I don't
and
know
that
anybody
to me
who's
is
ever
wrong.
Done that. I don't know anybody who's ever done that. I really don't.
Can I add a comment?
Please do, George.
Mark has got some wonderful ideas, and he said things that he would do, but those things that he would do make him an unelectable member of the GOP party.
Well, that's
he
true.
He would never represent anyone because he's not, well, I guess he's too honest.
No, George, you're right. Mark could never get nominated.
No, he's talking about you.
Oh, me.
Yes.
Well... Which of my ideas make me unelectable? I actually was elected once. It was a sad time in my life. But what are my ideas, George, that you think make me unelectable as a Republican?
The idea, well, let's go back a little in history. It was in the 60s, healthcare cost about 6% of our GNP.
Mm-hmm.
There is no reason why the government shouldn't be involved in that. We're involved in education. Why shouldn't they consider healthcare coverage and compete again on a world stage? All those other civilized countries that are exporting have a nationalized system.
It's not just education. It's
right.
not just education. It's roads. We regulate electricity. We regulate natural gas. We regulate energy. This is something that you don't want to have a monopoly on.
If you want to make healthcare a public utility, then that's a sea change. And I just don't think that's a good thing. We have the best healthcare system in the world here in the United
States.
So
we say.
Well,
I think we do, George. You know,
with 37 best, according to the United Nations Health Organization?
Well, you know what? Anything out of the UN is trash. So I'm not.
Well, look at our life expectancy. Virtually every European nation and Canada and Japan, they all live longer than we do. Australia, New Zealand to boot.
Okay, you know, there are a lot of factors in there. I want to see that study before I just accept that they have
a life
better,
expectancy.
You know,
no one disputes the life expectancy number.
No. I want to see why they have a life expectancy in excess of ours.
Because we are
healthy.
I'll tell you why. You want to know why? Because according to a recent Harvard study, 45,000 Americans a year die because they don't have enough insurance.
Okay.
45,000.
Okay, and how many die in car accidents compared to others, and how many die
10,000. I actually know that number.
The whole point is...
No, it's 50,000.
The whole point is...
50,000 car accidents, 10,000 guns.
There's a million things that can impact the life expectancy study, and
Here's the point.
I want to make
Why
sure...
Why is our health care more expensive than every single industrialized nation?
Because we have the best coverage.
The English are happy, the Canadians are happy.
You know what?
George?
If you can't cover pre-existing conditions,
there you go.
It can't be the best.
There you go.
All right, well, I'm willing to meet you on that one, George. There's no problem. The Republican Party wants to take care of pre-existing conditions.
No, they don't.
So, yes, they do.
But here's that's the point, Mark.
Let me
never make it as a Republican.
Let me throw a statistic at you, George.
Okay.
You know what? Very high-profile disease in the United States, breast cancer. You know, it gets tons of press, it gets tons of funding, et cetera. You know, if a woman is diagnosed with breast cancer in the United States, she has a 91% chance of survival. If a woman in Europe gets diagnosed with breast cancer, she has a 77% chance of survival. That's the difference between the global budget of the government-run healthcare systems in Europe and the United States. It costs a lot more to save 91% than it does to save 77%.
Mike, I'm really glad.
What you said, Mark, I would like to see your statistics, what they're based on, but it's also somewhat cultural also, and not just purely based on the healthcare.
Mike, I'm really glad that you brought up breast cancer, because that's a specific thing. I want to recommend everybody, I'm going to recommend you do this too, Mike, when you get home, I want everyone to Google Hawaii Health and NY Times. There's a wonderful article in the New York Times on healthcare in Hawaii. And it talks about the fact that since 1974, Hawaii has required everyone who works 20 hours a week, that employer has to provide healthcare. There are very few people who are uninsured. Here's what it says about breast cancer, just the example you gave. Hawaii has the nation's largest incidence of breast cancer, but the lowest death rate from the disease. Now, this is not a question of lowest incidence of the cancer. They got the cancer. They got more than the rest of the nation for whatever reason, but the lowest death rate from the disease. They also, the article goes on to say that Hawaii residents live longer than people in the rest of the country, and, get this, has the lowest health care premiums in the country. The lowest in the country. They live the longest. They have more breast cancer, but they survive most from it. This is a system that's working right now. Hawaii has shown how it can be done. Europe has shown how it can be done. Canada has shown how it can be done. Let me suggest to you that the main reason why the Republicans will not support even a compromise on health care is because they know that once you get it, the people like it. That's true of Medicare. 94% support Medicare. That's true of the people of Hawaii, as this article shows. Once you can just say, I don't have to worry about health care. I just present my card and I'm covered. People like that.
Well, you know what, Mark? They like the health care they have now. Americans are satisfied with their health care. I understand George's point about pre-existing conditions, but it is the best health care in the world.
Some 65% of Americans are satisfied with their health care. 94% are satisfied with Medicare. That's a big difference.
You mentioned Canada. You and I debated last week, and you remember I brought up the provincial minister of Newfoundland in Canada is coming to the United States this week for his medical treatment for his heart. He's not getting it in Canada. They can't do what we can do for him here.
Look, I have no problem with super wealthy people in America getting whatever the best quality they can.
How many people at the grocery store get that same treatment?
That's exactly my point. You know, yes, I'm sure the prime minister, the provincial head of Newfoundland can get whatever care, the best care money can buy.
But he can't get it in Canada. That's my point.
But you know what?
He's coming to the United States to get it.
You know what? It won't in any way harm rich people's care. The super wealthy who are going to get the Cadillac of Cadillac plans to say that every American should be able to get basic health care. It won't.
And compare the cost. If an average person at the grocery store employee had the same illness, how much would be spent on his care compared to somebody who is wealthy, say a Bush or someone?
Well, George, if he has coverage, probably the same amount.
George. Thank you for your call. I want to ask you, George, and everyone listening to just Google Hawaii, New York Times, and Health. Read the article because I think it shows that Hawaii is really leading the way for the rest of the country. Thank you for your call, George. I always appreciate when you call and your passion. If you want to leave a comment further, you can do so on the website at marklevineradio.com. And anyone, in fact, who wants to leave a comment on today's show is always free to do so. Put your comments down. Sometimes I read them the week following at marklevineradio.com. Mike, I couldn't disagree with you more, but I'm always glad to have you on the show. Let's find a way for Republicans and Democrats to work together. Is that so hard?
Mark, the solution is to take redistricting out of the hands of partisan legislatures.
I agree with that.
And make districts not as severe as they are.
I have no problem with that, but that won't affect the Senate at all. So we're going to have to work out a way around the filibuster. Thank you for listening. Tune in next week for more of the Inside News.